Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Saturday Night on the Town, Health Science and Energy Show, canned version, with lots of immersion. Yeah, we had a great time last night with Steve, of course. We had covered a lot of topics about some of the early scientists, including Benjamin Franklin. So anyhow, we're going to start off with another one here. Here we go. Where are you, Dr. Bell? You there?
This is something I pulled out of the LA Times. The reason I pulled that out is because 1981 is when they officially, through the Electronic Executive Intelligence Review magazine, they announced the what became known as the Haig-Kissinger depopulation policy. And that's where they were going to get rid of 1 billion people off the face of the earth through diseases and other matters. So, you know, when the herpes was created, it was spread into colleges, and then it was evolved into the AIDS in 1978 when they...
Is that amplifying your voice?
No, there's no amplifier.
Okay.
1978, this is just for the recording.
Okay.
1978, they went into the homosexual community and with the hepatitis B vaccine in San Francisco, inoculated 2,000 people, and they all came down with, you know, it was a... That time the vaccine was a mixture of the sheep Vishnu virus and the cattle bovine virus, and which then became AIDS. So that's where AIDS started. You know, basically in San Francisco. It was created in the Pentagon earlier in the 70s. Back in 1960, in Mobile, Alabama, they gave 1 million people cancer shots. You know, injected cancer through the polio vaccine down there. All this came out in the news over the years. All these things have come up. So it's like once in a while you'll catch an ad like this, but not too often does this stuff get publicized. You have to kind of pry it out. Clinton's talked about it from time to time. Dr. Bell, is there any water? Because my voice is going to quit. I got an itchy throat. There's no water here. So I'll show you some slides now on some of this stuff here. I got them spaced out a little bit. There we go. This is the thing that started the whole Roswell event. This is a photograph of the 776 Aero Squadron where I was stationed at Point Arena Air Force Station in Northern California. And this is up on a mountaintop, and this is the radar, the NFPS 35 radar that was responsible for bringing down the ships that crashed in the New Mexico area back during the Roswell days when these sets were being tested. Now this is 5 million watts. It's a lot of power, and it can definitely. We used to stand there at the bottom. I think the building is 9 stories tall. We used to stand at the bottom and throw eggs up to the antenna when it was on, and when the egg comes down, it's hard boiled, literally. So it goes up and down, and you got a hard boiled egg. So that's how much radiation in it. See, people don't understand is that when radiation, normally you think, oh, the radar is going to push radiation out into the ocean where this thing worked from. But if you understand the way the HAARP project works, you can realize that here's the big mountain right here, and all of humanity is back here, and this is the ocean right here. So the antenna sits up here on the top and sends radiation out. But see, what they don't tell you is things called temperature inversions. You've heard of that, right? Temperature inversion. You get a temperature inversion, then the beam is reflected with all its power right back on people. This happened one night in 1969, we were up there. And we were inland, way inland back here, we had the what's called the Strategic Air Command, SAC Squadron, and we had Hamilton Air Force Base. And then we'd see all these extraterrestrial ships coming down, but if something came out of the flow, nothing we could do about them, but something came was different, we saw out there, then we scrambled the jets out. Well, one night we saw a large object going 60 miles an hour, about 25 miles out to sea as it appeared on the radar. So we sent the jets out, but what it was is it was a reflection of the temperature changing. And so what happened was there was a Greyhound bus going down Highway 1 with a bunch of people in it. Beam was coming down here, hitting this bus, which is going 60 miles an hour, and then reflecting back up to the antenna, giving us an indication it was out to sea. So we scrambled for a Greyhound bus. But see, the sad part of it is, people on that bus were getting 5 million watts of radiation just hitting that bus. See, that's dangerous. And so the HART project, where it differs, which is, you'll be reading about, it's high-frequency active oral projection, what it stands for. The HART project, instead of having 5 million watts, you got the Earth, place up here in Alaska, they create a temperature inversion here. The beam goes up here and goes way off down below the horizon down here and radiates somebody wherever they're testing for underground nuclear labs or whatever they're doing. This is the danger of this. And this is a projected lens, so they can project this lens with the HART project anywhere north of the equator that this thing is, and they can target anywhere north of the equator, or they can set it on the equator and they can target anywhere below the equator. So there's no place on Earth that's subject from the radiation, which is 1.5 trillion watts. That's pretty powerful. I don't know if you know how much power that is, but it's unheard of. And what's really ridiculous is that when you're out here working with the Earth's electrosphere, over here you got the sun. The sun generates a lot of energy to the Earth. This is called solar wind. And the Earth has a vitality field around them called the anima mundi, which the Andromedans work with a lot. And when you go to sleep at night, that's what your body is charging off of. But most people, when they go to sleep at night, they get a jumping sensation as their body's getting ready to go into this charge. And they get a jumping sensation, like you're laying in bed, get that jump. You ever have that happen? What's happening is when you're going to sleep at night, your body decompresses. And so your aura field extends out about 2 inches from its normal sphere around your body. And during this time, this is when your liver and your kidneys and your spleen and everything start going to work to detox your body from the whole day. You got all that lactic acid that your body produced from standing upright. You know, spent muscle tissue is lactic acid. So your body is supposed to detox during this time for 2 hours. If your body temperature raises, your brain uses 80% of the nutrition that it has. Then after 2 hours, you go into your next phase, which is called rapid eye movement sleep, where you move out 13 feet or more. And this is where you go into your astral travel mode. But a lot of people can't reach astral travel anymore because they're getting hit by radiation. To stop that, we developed the pyramid, which I'll show you later on in the slides, that goes over the bed. And we sell them all over the world. And people sleep in these pyramids. It allows them to have normal sleep, and they don't get that disturbing jumping sensation because you're fully relaxed. This is one of the products that we created as a result of that. Of course, as you probably know, if you're not allowed to maintain rapid eye movement sleep, you gradually go insane, okay? Become very destructive. These serial killers that you read about, they don't reach rapid eye movement sleep. They're comatose. And that's eventually what happens. You become a killer or a very, very raging animal if you don't have rapid eye movement sleep. That's because you don't get fulfillment of your dreams in your astral body. I'll explain that a little bit more. I'm just showing you some of these slides here.
That has to do with your stress.
Well, yeah, you're stressed. But well, I could show you now because it's kind of like an informal thing here. What happens is in your body, okay, if you were to take an ordinary wire and put a battery across it, right, current would flow negative to positive through the wire, okay? And you'd have a magnetic field at right angles to that. Okay, your body is the same way. Your body has a brain in it, and the brain has electrolytes in it, we were talking about earlier. Electrolytes are plentified by herbs like Fotai Ginseng and Gota Kola, which we use in our vitamin formulas. What depletes the electrolytes, the largest depletion of electrolytes in the body, making you susceptible to irritability, making you susceptible to radiation, is automobile and hydrocarbon exhaust. What we have to do in our formulations is we have to put large amounts of vitamin E and large amounts of lecithin and selenium, which activates the vitamin E. So we created what's called synergistic formulation. That's what our vitamins are all about. So we have those. So if you take our vitamin formulas, your brain will have a large amount of electrolytes. Meanwhile, in the brain, you've got two types of switches. One is called a receptor, And one is called an effector. And what happens is, when the hormones are secreted from the endocrine glands, which contain your consciousness, when the hormones get to these bridges, these two types of switches, in the case of the receptor, they close a switch, they close a synaptic switch, which then causes electricity to flow negative to positive through your spine, creating a magnetic field at right angles to it. When the hormones arrive at the effector switch sites in your brain, the effectors are normally conducting electricity, like, you know, your heart's being told to have electricity to beat, your lungs, your diaphragm is moving to move your lungs. That's normal function. Then what happens is the receptor stops this flow of energy, and in a magnetic field, electricity stops to move through the spine, and the field collapses. Okay, so this turning on and turning off of these fields creates a rising and falling magnetic field, which then extends out through the north pole of the body, which is the third ventricle of the brain, creating an electromagnetic aura. Okay. Now, when you get into poisons, what happens is poisons like chiari, snake bite. You've heard of how some insects bites attack your central nervous systems. Other will attack your digestive tract. Different kinds of poisons attack different parts of the body. The bottom line is, what the poison does to you is it affects this electrical activity of the brain, and so the brain ceases to send out the proper electricities. This is what all toxins and poisons end up doing to your body on one level. In the case of radiation coming in, okay, like X-rays from the TV set or ultraviolet radiation coming from the sun, what happens is these forms of radiation start suppressing the magnetic fields in the body, which not only affects brain activity, but it also affects other cellular activity. When the other cellular activity is affected, your body starts producing what's called free radicals. Electrons that are free to split off from their proton, hydrogen, and go floating around the body and make erroneous connections and cut with other cells that shouldn't be, causing cross-linking, cracking of the skin, proteins to form where they're not supposed to, tumors, which then become activated and become from benign to cancerous. They form electrical diseases like epilepsy, Parkinson's disease, where you're starting getting a decay action of the electrolytes. You can go on and on and on and on with diseases. But the bottom line is, you need to keep the aura field up. Okay? So the first thing we do is we produce photons, ginseng, and gotacholine in our vitamin formulas. And then we have our trace minerals, which keep the electrical fields balanced. So through the actions of the different mineral formulas and the vitamin formulas, we keep the metabolic function up. When we keep the metabolic function up, then we need to raise the electrical levels. Remember when I showed you earlier in the workshop, we were rubbing our hands together and creating that energy? Well, that's the vitality energy. So what happens is, when you use a device like the receptor or a device like the pyramid on the body, it enhances this electromagnetic field. And and I wrote about this in the little red booklet laying there. You can get those for like $1.25. There's a section of that little red booklet called auric offset, meaning that in one stage of activity, a person could get an outside radiation from X-rays or from a TV set, or they can get it from ultraviolet and have an effect. Or if your electrical fields are properly balanced, your radiation is so great that any outside radiation comes in automatically, coincidentally joins your field, so you end up absorbing the radiation and making it work for you rather than destructive. Okay, this is what happened in Japan when they found out that the foci and ginseng in individuals over there absorbed the radiation from the bombs going off, but at the same time it didn't have a long-term effect on them because they could handle the radiation. Okay, it's like sun. How many of you in here wear sunglasses in the sun? See, I've never worn them. I don't ever wear sunglasses. I can look at the bright sun during an eclipse. It has no effect on me. I do it all the time because I keep my auric radiation level up. And you don't need sunglasses. To me, sunglasses just dull the outside environment because you don't need them. But they'll tell you you're going to get damaged from the sun, wear sunglasses, blah, 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 because they're stupid in the establishment because they don't understand how these electromagnetic fields work. Second thing is the rate, what we call the potential or the rate that the brain can synapse at. In other words, some people are high limited in the synaptic rate of their brains can actually fire off at or create synaptic activity. For example, in order to hear audible sounds, you know, audible sounds generate in the range from about 100 cycles per second in the human ear to about 15,000 cycles per second. Beyond that, most humans can't hear below that or above it. This would be a hum, and this would be a high-pitched whistle, you know, right here, to perceptions. In order for you to hear any of this, your brain activity has to be able to produce within the brain matching frequencies, and these matching frequencies serve as the interpreting frequencies when the ear is stimulated, the diaphragm in the ear is stimulated, and the energy goes down on the aura field, okay? If you are putting a lot of nitrites in your body, you're a heavy meat eater, you're putting heavy alcohol, like heavy hard liquor, that kind of stuff in your body, things that dull your senses, what happens is these things, the way they're dulling your senses, is they're short-circuiting the synaptic rate of the brain, and so the brain can no longer function in these higher frequencies. You start to lose your perception of sound at high end, and lose your perception of sound at low end. You become colorblind. You can't see as good as other people. Okay? These are the kinds of things that happen. Being a contactee, like I am, what I had to do over the years was to develop a superconscious state. So the exercises I learned from the martial arts and the meditation from the Tibetan masters I studied with taught me how to make my brain even more acute than a normal human's. I became superhuman in certain aspects. It's not unusual, for example, for a dolphin in the ocean to hear 150,000 cycles per second, you know, which is basically 100 times higher than a human ear can hear, okay? So you can develop your senses, and when you start developing your sensitive, you become super sensitive. And this is how you can then do what we call aural extension. When you extend your aura further out, what happens is you start coming into contact being, you know, of like Andromedans and Pleiadians. Because you can bet if somebody has a 1,000-year lifespan like a Pleiadian or a 5,000-year lifespan like an Andromeda, which is also a human-looking being, their aura fields extend out literally light years, whereas an average human might extend an aura 10 or 20 feet. Jesus Christ was said to have an aura field of about 2 miles, you know. So these are some of the things that have to do with the workings of the biochemistry and the activation by the electrical precursing energies in the body in working in conjunction to make you a much more powerful being, okay? These are some of the lessons that we learned over the years. If you start to get sick, I'll just give you an example. Let's say you're getting an itchy throat or something, right? You start to come down with some illness. You usually can tell when you're starting to get run down. You have to be pretty damn stupid not to know, especially at our ages, that when we're starting to something's coming on. Okay, now what's the first thing that you're going to put in your body other than food to fight the disease? What have you been educated to put in your body? Does anybody know?
Vitamin C.
Vitamin C, which is the wrong thing. It's absolutely the wrong thing. Okay, I'll explain why. The DNA, okay, when you're starting to get sick, okay, your aura field is obviously collapsed, okay? The aura field in its normal vitality, you know, in its normal interpreting range is called the immune system, okay? This is the aura part of the aura field that we look at, and your body is 5% mineral. This body being 5% mineral controls 95% of other metabolic functions. So the first thing you would want to put in your body would not be a vitamin, but it would be a mineral, okay? Because you got to get your consciousness back. Because you're looking down at DNA. You're right on the DNA frequency. The DNA, okay, the DNA is starting to collapse, okay, when you get sick. Now, let's look at what DNA is, okay? DNA is 4 amino acids, okay? There's 4 amino acids. Cytosine, adenine, guanine, and let's see, cytosine, adenine, thiamine, and guanine. These 4 amino acids would be, if I were looking at your blood or anything on the earth, and I saw those 4 amino acids, 2 sugars, 2 phosphates, repeating themselves over and over again, I'd say that's from this world. If I were to look at a DNA ladder and there's another amino acid in there, it would be an alien life form. That's the first thing that you'd find out. Now, that's where it all starts. Okay, first your oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, carbon, four atoms, DNA. Boom. Now let's look at DNA for a second. Exactly what it is, okay? Okay, first of all, remember I said earlier, the body is biochemical here, and then up here it's electrical, and then it's electrical precursing. Okay, let's go to the middle level. We'll start looking at the middle level first. The middle level, the body has a waveform. It's subject to a waveform that looks like this. As it said on Earth, you know, these four amino acids exist, and electricity came here at some point, hit our atmosphere, and started all life as we know it. Okay? So first of all, we have these currents. If you were to look on an oscilloscope, you know, if you were to hook an alternator up to a wire, to a load, and back, and this electricity is going at 60 cycles per second, we were to hook an oscilloscope across this load, we would see a waveform. Looks like this, right? The only reason we don't see the wave coming back is because internally in the oscilloscope, we have what's called a blanking circuit, which shuts off the beam when it scans back. But in our bodies, the beam scans back, so the beam is scanning. So the first thing that's happening is our body is scanning, okay? Then what happens is we have the two sugars and the two phosphate frequencies start to form, okay? They start to form. There's still no amino acids here yet. The electricity is first, okay? The electricity is first. Then the amino acids are formed in ladders. And if you were to look at an actual diagram of these ladders, you would see electrical forces. One force is going like this, clockwise, coming over here to this intersection, which is called T-intersection, counterclockwise force, moving over here, setting up a counterclockwise force here, over to here, which sets up a clockwise force here, and a counterclockwise force on the next one. So you'd have four of these ladders, okay? When you have these four base pairs, these are called base pairs, okay? When you're born, you have four more, okay? You've probably heard the expression base pairs per turn, right? The idea is to have many, many base pairs per turn of DNA, base pairs being four amino acids. If for some reason these amino acids aren't here, then you're decaying, you're dying, your body is shutting down, okay? So now what happens is these four energies start rotating and counter-rotating, and they attract some other energy which forms an ash. And this ash is a sediment. In other words, these electrical forces are working within themselves, in each cell in the body, and they're creating an ash or a substance. When this ash starts to form, it's called a virus. Okay? These are called viruses. Okay? And they're also called RNA. Strands, but they're actually a virus, and they have what are called bipoles and dipoles. Okay? Anytime you start to get sick, these viruses that are friendly are being invaded by viruses, DNA viruses that are not friendly. Okay? So you're dealing with a viral level right at the point where your body is producing cells at the rate of 50 million per second. Everybody understand that? So if you put vitamin C in, your body is already starting to be possessed by another frequency. If it takes over your body, you're obviously dead. But it's already starting to take over. You're going to have, hopefully your immune system is going to kick in and reverse it. But if you're putting vitamin C in there, I can guarantee you that virus is taking it, and you're feeding your cold and you're feeding your disease. So first of all, you've got to address this action of this virus. And that's how you address the body through the mineral kingdom. So you put chromium picolinate in your system first, for at least 8 hours to reverse this negative dipole viral effect that your body's having, okay? That's why it's very important to take chromium. Then you start putting in vitamin A, which is after about 8 hours, you start putting in vitamin A and more chromium, which then vitamin A is called a first ray or will disease, and it directs the immune system to go out and attack the viruses. Then you put your vitamin C in. Usually after you come down with something, you start to come down with something, 15 hours after you feel the effects is when you start putting in the vitamin C, okay? This is my water here. Now, I have an itchy throat, which is, that's because I've changed climates, so I haven't got much sleep. Because I flew in here last night, and I'll fly out tomorrow morning. You know, that's my schedule. So I'll take some chromium, which is in my vitamins. I'll double up on that, and this will go away in a few hours. Second thing you got to realize is that this electrical activity that's becoming a physical thing is that the ash, the guanine, the cytosine, the adenine, these amino acids are waste products. So the amino acid system in our body is actually waste products from electrical, because we're electrical beings before we're physical beings. So the waste products then start to combine and combine and combine, which then form more and more heavy bonds or heavy amino acids through more and more DNA strands. Okay? So we are actually creating an ash. Electricity is vibrating in our cells, creating an ash. These ash are sugars and phosphates, and the ashes combine to make heavier and heavier compounds all the way into proteins. Okay? That's how the body really works. So Andromedan Pleiadian technology teaches us the electrical work. When I wrote this stuff up in Death of Ignorance, in 1979, two Nobel Peace Prizes were awarded.
Okay, let's now go to the next paper-rooney here. Let's see what we got. It's just not sure if this was on the other side or not. I will check it, see what this side has on it, if anything. You never know. We're doing all these wonderful tapes here. And hope you're enjoying what we're doing here. I think this is on two separate tapes. Anyway.
To me, it's kind of obsolete, and I'm working on another book. And I'm just showing you how some of this science perpetuated into actual wars on this planet. So understanding your DNA is very important. All of our systems, see, where the electrical precursoring energy comes in is that the directing force that tells you there's an intelligence to this. So you saw the electricity. And I showed you then the sugars and phosphates, which then became the ashes, which become the body. There's a directive intelligence that's in this combination that takes place on an etheric level. And that's the electrical precursing energies. That's where the receptor and the pyramid and all these things come in. Okay, that's what this stuff is all about. Now, today I'm just getting a little bit deeper in my workshop here. But you come to one of our seminars and we get really deep with this stuff. I'm just trying to show you in a way you can understand it, how all this works. When I worked at NASA, at Rockwell, actually contracted to NASA, I worked with the late Wernher von Braun on a lot of projects. This is one of them. This was in Seal Beach, California. This is part of the Saturn rocket that I worked on. This took man to the moon, the Apollo group. We used all Saturn vehicles, and I helped design and build these and check them out before. My last title was Senior Spacecraft Tech Checkout Technician, or Engineer, rather. This is over at Area 51. This shot was taken by Gary Schultz over there. This is a two-man craft that flies. It has a side force of 33 Gs. One of our best jet fighters would have a force, if it made a turn, of maybe 2 Gs. And the pilot, in a normal suit they would call a flight suit, would be able to withstand approximately 10 Gs, their own force. Beyond that, they're going to black out, okay? This particular device produces 33 Gs, three times the acceleration on a turn as a jet plane. So this is what's called a full zero-G suit is worn here. And you might have seen a picture on Popular Science magazine a few years ago where this rat is running around inside of an aquarium. The aquarium is full of water, but it's really like a freon-based substance carrying oxygen. And he's breathing it in his lungs, and he's running around. Okay, that was developed by the Navy SEALs at the end of World War II as a diving suit, where you literally have to put this helmet on. You take a liquid into your lungs, and you start breathing it as a liquid. And you can go as 10,000 feet down. When they went down on the Titanic out here, they were wearing those suits. You know, along with those little submarines, they can actually dive that deep now. Well, they have a suit that's like that, and the reason that when you have your lungs full like that of this liquid, and a friend of mine who flew this told me that it's like drowning. You know, it's a horrible experience when you actually have to start breathing this liquid in. It burns and everything, but after a few, you know, about 30 seconds, he says it's working. They have a suit, and the whole damn suit is in the liquid. And the idea, the main thing is to get it in your lungs, because if it's in your lungs, when you make these tight turns, your lungs don't get crushed. Because if you weighed 100 pounds, you weighed 3,300, you know, in the 33G turn. So that's why this technology ended up in these things. This was taken over at Area 51, where the spaceship was flown. This is a drawing that one of my friends snuck out of there and showed me how some of the inner workings of the different mechanisms go in that particular spaceship to make it operate like it does. These are experimental, and they do crash a lot. They try to fly them out in that area. Occasionally fly them down to Las Vegas, which is nearby.
Who makes them up?
We make them out there. Lockheed Skunk Works does a part of it. But it's Lockheed, yeah. And it's a technology that's based on the Graves technology. It was reverse engineered from the Graves technology. It's part of the joint alien American technologies that started they started their actual pact at Muroc Field in 1954. And they still build some there, but now that's called Edwards Air Force Base. Most of these fly over to Area 51. They have some other more advanced ones now that they're using. There's another class of ships that they're flying that are plutonium-powered. One of them crashed up at Dulce, New Mexico, actually. And my friends, the Indians up there, they're Hickory Apaches. When the ship crashed, it left plutonium spill. And the plutonium went into this river, and it happened to be at the top of the reservation. They had these seven lakes where they used to have tourists. And they made most of their money off these lakes. And the fishing was great up there. It's in the Four Corners area. But when the ship crashed, all the plutonium spilled and it killed all the damn fish in all the lakes. You know, it was written up a little bit in a few papers locally, but it never got into the big mainstream news. Paul Benowitz he was the first guy to film. He owned Thunder Engineering down at in Albuquerque. He photographed a couple of shots of the crashed, it's called a Delta class ship. That's what I was looking for, the Delta class. A Delta class ship is an Air Force plane that we have now. Some of the technology was used in the B-1, but now it's about a 40-foot long ship, and it basically looks like a cigar. And on the very end of it is a very small tail section, which really doesn't do a whole hell of a lot because it's full anti-gravity. Anyhow, when Paul Benowitz photographed this crash of one of these things, there were a lot of abductions going on because Archuleta Mesa itself is where the Grays live. There was a whole colony of them in there. And so Myrna Hansen was driving up in that area a few years back in 1979, actually, and they were abducted, her and her daughter. And so the abduction, when they were abducted, the daughter wasn't implanted, but Myrna was. So when they did some hypnotic, Paul Benowitz was the guy before, the guy that's doing it now, I forget his name, but he's in a lot of these New Life Expos, you see him. He's very famous for doing regressions on people. I'll remember his name in a minute. But anyway, this was in the early days, in 1980. They took, Myrna said she thought she was, something was in her head, so they took her over to the Presbyterian Hospital in Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is near there. And they photographed, which became common, this lobe here and this lobe here, alien implants. John Whitman, or I forget his first name, Stephen Whitman, did his shooting. He was a gunman in the battle. He shot his wife, and then he shot 14 people in Austin, Texas, in 1984. It was one of the first sniper shootings. When they did an autopsy on him, he had the same implants, and they made an ABC National News special on that called Diary of Something. I forget what the last name of it was, but in this diary that he wrote that he had voices in his head and he was a Christian and he didn't believe in hurting people, but he said he was going to kill his wife. He couldn't control himself, which he did, and then he finally ended up shooting 14 people. And from what I understand from what came up from the government, these implants were activated because the Grays and the government working together are trying to take away our constitutional freedoms. And this is they orchestrate it through different dramas. This is one drama that was orchestrated in such a way that it caused a great deal of paranoia afterwards. So then they started taking these semi-automatic weapons away from the public and stuff. That was the beginning of that kind of legislation. I could name about 50 more incidents where more legislation, even more recent ones with bombings and things. But this is what happens, that, you know, what you call paranoia legislation takes place after a big freak out, you know, which then causes more losses of constitutional freedoms. Rather than go after the problem and realize where it's really coming from, they take it out on the American public, you know, with their ignorance. And this is going to continue. We got into time travel back in the 70s. Pleiadians educated into how it was. It's possible to fly physically into the past, but there is no future. The future is only here and now, where we are in this moment. This is an actual model of a ship I started to build. This is the actual full-size one that we built in Laguna Beach as it was under construction for time research. And we had it running, up and running for about 5 years, but the city made us take it apart because it didn't look in a residential area, this giant structure sitting there. This is the bottom. It looks like a giant octahedron. Well, you saw that picture before. It's what it looked like. This was the center section before the outside covers were put on it, and all the stuff that went in the middle was on it. So that was some early research. Then we got into healing technologies. This is the X1 healing machine that we developed. We never really produced very many. We built one prototype. Basically, what it does is a person looks at one of those colors when this device is activated, and they put their hand inside of this little box over here. And inside the box is a Corellian camera with a TV camera on it. And it works something like the receptor. You know, we first of all turn on red. We photograph your aura through your hand and your fingers, and we turn on central green, and we photograph your aura, and then we turn on violet, and we photograph your aura. If you're colorblind, if you're looking at red and think you're seeing orange, or if you're looking at green and think you're seeing yellow, physically it doesn't matter. Because what happens is we're able to photograph that phase shift between your optic nerve and what's going on down in your hand. And it tells us every atom in your body and all the different cells and organs that are connected to those seven different colors. We only have to scan three. So then what happens is this design, the patient, we put in that like a bathtub. And that's about the size of a large bathtub. And they lay in there in an Epsom salt baking soda. It's a balanced pH solution. And that tower then is placed over the tub, and they get proper amounts of radiation from the device to repair the damaged part of radiation that you're lacking in. So it just does the same thing as the receptor does, only it's much faster. So that's another technology that we created. You got to remember, with the receptor or any of this kind of stuff, these things aren't healing you. You heal yourself, but they're making pathways on an electronic level happen instantaneously, so you can heal yourself like boom. You don't have to wait an hour. Yeah.
What about the color that you're talking about and matching the color with equal vibration of sound?
Exactly. That's what our sound tapes do. That's exactly what we do. Yeah.
Sound
too. The X1 generates a sound and a color. It generates a whole bunch of stuff. You know, it's a whole complete set of radiation patterns that go all correlated to the deficiency. Then we got into propulsion systems. This is all part of my education, and of course, along the way, having already built a rocket that went to the moon, it was no big deal to get into the construction of some of these models, mock-ups, and smaller scale of how the propulsion systems worked on some of these ships. This is the inner core of what Pleiadian Type 3 ship, what it looks like on the inside, if you strip the hull away, as to how it works. Then, of course, we got into building the actual ships. We got into this one was 88 feet across. Here's a man standing on a ladder. And of course, when you get into this kind of construction, you have a thing called confiscation. This was confiscated by the government. So this does happen when you get too far out there. Then I started my contacts again recently with the Pleiadians, because the Andromedans were back. And because Billy Meyer seemed to me he got a little spaced out, and a lot of these other contactees got spaced out, the Pleiadians and the Andromedans says, "Why don't you start taking your own pictures?" I said, "That's a good idea." Because all during the time I would take people, there'd be a spaceship hovering 1,000 feet away, and people would see it. You know, I'd bring people out to see it. But we never took any pictures. I never was into it, you know. Well, so I did. So this is the beginning of the pictures. This was in Newport Beach last spring. Usually in the spring is when we take the pictures. Semyasi says, stop the car. So I stop the car. She says, there's the moon. There's a tree. It's out over the ocean. She says, take a picture of the moon. I says, okay. Boom. And this little bitty ship shows up. A little telemeter ship shows up in the film. It's about this. It's only a couple feet across. Just a little guy. And then I had the Andromedans came, and they said, okay. Now, this is a real lesson for me. I thought I had a full magazine of film, and I only had four shots left. So here comes the ship in. I've got four shots. It's at El Morro Bay and Laguna Beach. So I'm sitting there in my car taking these pictures. The ship is out over, this is over the ocean, and there's two shots that preceded this that the damn ship was too far away. I could see it, but the lens wasn't good enough. I only had a 300-millimeter lens on it. I have a 600-millimeter lens, but it's a great big giant telephoto lens, and I says, well, I don't want to drag that thing out, you know, so I just bring this littler lens out because it wiggles too much and it gets blurry. So anyhow, I did. This is shot number three, ship's coming in, and then so I'm thinking I'm really cool, and then I get the next shot, which is the final shot, was shot number four as it comes up off the horizon, comes in closer. It's got a very high dome on it, and then, of course, when it came right into my face, there was no more film. So the next shot, I don't have another next shot, but you can see the ship as it's getting closer. Yeah, well, there'll be more, you know, I'll be taking more. When we work with this stuff, we first of all work with seven levels of consciousness when we work with this science, okay? And each one of these levels of consciousness, as we see here, the physical, has sub-levels, okay? Then we have a thing called mass consciousness. Mass consciousness allows us to align with the sub-levels to accept it into our reality. In other words, most people would accept this as a chair because tradition has taught them that this is a chair because of its shape and what it's supposed to do. But at some places, they never saw a chair before, they might not accept this to be a chair until you educated the entire planet, and then it would be in their reality, in their imagination. And I always give the analogy of if we had a bunch of cavemen in here, okay, and I was teaching you about basic science, and all that would exist outside the door would be cavemen. Well, everybody in the cave community would know a solid exists. Everybody would know a liquid would exist because you've seen them all. You know, you take your club and you pound it on the ground and it's solid. You pour water, it's liquid. But if I suddenly told a bunch of cave people that this gaseous state exists, you might think I'm in a twilight zone already, okay? Until I get maybe a clay bowl out, put some fire on it, boil the water, and you see the steam come off. Oh, that's gas. Okay? So now, the whole cave community would accept gas. So you guys would have seen gas, so you leave the door and you go outside into your life, and you start telling your friends about gas, and they all think you're nuts. But pretty soon you've demonstrated gas, and now everybody accepts it, so the whole world accepts gas. So click, another light goes on in the entire consciousness of the planet, right? Well, this has now gone with the human race into the ionic state, okay? We know about ionization. We know about curling photography, which shows ionization of the meridians of the body or of the chi energy as it exposes itself into the atmosphere. The next step we're going to educate people into is a third etheric state. Soon enough, the third etheric state, which is called the chemical ether, will become known. The chemical ether... We start talking about it when I start talking about DNA and how the electricity applies to DNA to create cells and viral activity. The second ether is a medium that we'll eventually get to. But this, the second ether, which is called the reflective ether, is an ether of energy that actually you can see it. Existence of this field if your brain synapses are shooting off fast enough. Now, unfortunately, most people are not eating the proper foods and doing the right things to make themselves see on the etheric level approaching the second ether. But the first time that I was majorly exposed to it was up in Aspen, Colorado, when Semyasi. It was the middle of winter, and they closed off the road. So they closed off this highway up in what's called Pyramid Peak. So I went up a highway behind Aspen. And during the summer, that road would have gone over the top of a mountain at 10,000 feet and come down to a lower part like Vail. But during that time of the year, the whole road was blocked off. and you couldn't even get near the top of that mountain. So I had to go up there and park my motorhome on the edge of where the road was closed off at 2 o'clock in the morning, start hiking in the middle of, it was about 1 foot deep snow, up a road. Luckily it was a full moon. I had to hike for almost 2 hours to get straight up on top of a mountain. And it was pretty cool that night because it was in the middle of winter. It was just December. But when I got further up in there on the mountain, first thing I noticed, because it was a full moon that night, I said, those, these white wolves are out there, you know. And Semyonsky says, don't worry about those. They're just protecting what you're about to see. And I says, what's that? So she got me up a little bit higher, and she says, look over here. And all of a sudden, light started coming on. And what I saw was a huge, giant city north of, or south of Aspen, Colorado, up on a mountaintop that was the second etheric city that actually had living beings in it on the second ether, which normally you wouldn't see. But because my body was in good shape and the conditions where I was in, I was elevated my consciousness up to see it. This is the same thing existed in Avalon during King Arthur's time. It exists in the Gobi Desert now, where the kingdom of the Gobi of Shambhala, as it exists, it's called White Island. And these areas will start to become illuminated further on in the centuries as people reach a higher and higher consciousness. But meanwhile, this is the plane of most angels that you see. Okay, so some people are spontaneously developing visions of the second etheric for short periods of time. And because we are reaching a higher vibratory frequency, the second ether is starting to vibrate a little bit lower than it normally does, and we're coming up. So more and more paranormal phenomena is starting to become observable. Beyond that, we go to the first etheric, which is called the light ether, and that is where light comes from the astral plane and is processed on the physical plane. All light is photons. You know, when you go to sleep at night, you go to the astral plane, right? So you close your eyes are closed, yet you can see things, you can see pictures and images. Why? Because the astral plane is self-illuminating. And the light inside the sun that lights it up on the physical plane is coming from the astral plane first. And particles, what science calls megons, are illuminating the energy down here on Earth. In our technologies of paradigm, when I was saying earlier, we make entire environments. What we do is we create environmental systems inside your house that will bring your energies of your living room or your bedroom up to such a high frequency that you're able to see into the fourth dimension. And we demonstrate that at our seminars in Laguna, and we make people's homes that way. So that's when we take systems technologies, in other words, the precursing energies like the receptor, 1,000 times longer, and keep you in, you come home every night to that energy instead of having to work off the sound pollution and all the other stuff that you have to work out in the normal world that's out there now. If you had this world created out there, you'd live in that world 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But it takes a little while to deprogram your DNA so that your eyesight can work, your ears can work, and that's what our music tapes and all that's all developed to do, is to help get you moving in that direction. Each one of these higher planes of consciousness has subatomic particles that go in multiples of the speed of light. So in other words, if you were looking at a proton, as we were talking about earlier, which is a hydrogen atom, okay, proton-electron relationship is moving at the speed of light, which is 186,273 miles per second. That's how fast an electron is. Now, if you were to realize that this chair is full of electrons and full of protons, and there's huge gaps. I mean, there's a huge gap in here. And if you start to realize that everything has protons and electrons in it in the room here, and there's huge gaps, you can excite your consciousness up to a point you can start moving through matter with your own consciousness. And that's what yogis do when they, you know, Christ demonstrated it when he became invisible at the well of Samaria when they tried to stone him. And masters will put their hands through things, you know, and you develop these powers. The extraterrestrials oftentimes have that. Well, that's just dealing with the physical plane, you know, exiting that. Inside the proton, there are other particles moving at a high speed with a great gap in them. And these gaps, as you move from one plane of, in other words, here's a plane right here, we consider the physical plane with all the electrons approach the Earth, right? Then you realize inside the Earth is a whole other level of structure of higher frequency, things smaller than electrons, you know, called neutrinos and quarks and hadrons. And there's a whole world built up inside that world using these as their outer particles. In other words, there's a whole world using it, okay? Exiting between this big world here and this next world is called the fourth dimension. So the fourth dimension exists within frequency within the next dimension, which is the fifth dimension, and so on and so on, okay? So you have many, many dimensions, each one of a higher frequency and a higher energy, each dimension being habited by beings, okay? So you end up with higher and higher frequencies until you end up with the ultimate, or the free atom, the logoic plane, or the ultimate plane to be on. So here you would have fewer beings than you would have here. Here you'd have fewer beings here, and less dense, and less dense, until you end up with one being here, the logos, or logi. And the being, when you get to the like the logos, this type of being would be like a being that's a whole solar system. The whole solar system becomes his chakras. And so their days, their expansion of time is a lot greater than our time. When these energies come down, they're focused through the mental plane. So as they're focused through the different plane, these characteristics, the way they intertweave and intertwine and finally become electromagnetic as they approach the first ether, determine the actual shape of our DNA. So when science looks through an electron microscope, the reason he sees the shapes of DNA is because all of these are compounds of different higher spirals of energy coming down to produce the DNA level on the physical plane. Okay, so that's how this all works here. And so in extraterrestrial science, we learn to work with all of these different planes of consciousness simultaneously. Secondly, these planes are frequencies, we also assign colors to them. This drawing doesn't have it because it's not complete yet as a slide. But this would be red, this would be blue, green, yellow, orange, dark blue, and violet. If you were to, you could assign them A, B, C, D, E, F, and G as musical notes. With vitamins, you'd have different categories. This would be the vitamin A category up here, vitamin C category here, B complex here, and all through the vitamin spectrum. So when you begin to work and see all these things as units of light, biochemistry, color, through color therapy, you realize all the ramifications of it, you can go down in the DNA and cause great changes to happen without going through a lot of exploratory effects. This drawing, we're showing how the body actually goes together, okay? We are oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon, which equals all the cells into DNA and RNA. Then the body is 5% minerals, which controls 95% of all metabolic functions. As I mentioned earlier when I was lecturing, then we go into enzymes. We're dealing with a hydrogen atom. The hydrogen atom is a proton and electron. And the seven levels of consciousness, which is on the other chart, are flowing into this dimension, our reality, through the hydrogen atom. And the hydrogen atom combines 50 million cells per second into all the organs of the skin, the heart, the eyes, and finally the whole body. The bottom line is every single hydrogen atom and every single organ is emanating this consciousness of the seven levels. And what we have a tendency to do down here in the physical plane is start blocking these emanations so that they can't clearly express themselves through the hydrogen atom. That's where we end up with all this distortion, disease, and confusion that we have. Yeah.
IV chelation to take out the minerals in the body, the heavy minerals.
Yeah.
Is that valuable?
Well, yeah, but chelation is very important, but it's totally obsolete. What you want to do is realize, first of all, when you have arteries clogged up, okay, how does an artery work? The artery works by changing positive, negative, positive, negative, positive, negative, changing electron flow through its walls, through fats, the actions of unsaturated fats, okay? When unsaturated fats move through the artery, they discharge electricity, and electricity frictions against the walls. Saturated fats, okay, saturated fats, which clog up arteries, are usually too heavy in protons. The electron activity is shitty, okay? So there's no viability. So chelation went by the wayside when we started using unsaturated fats, like flaxseed oil. I use lots of flaxseed oil every day in my own personal diet. Because when you put flaxseed oil in here, flaxseed oil has electron-proton action and it brings the seven levels of consciousness to the cell walls.
So when you have flaxseed oil in your diet, it causes you to lose weight. I've been able to lose a lot of weight by taking flaxseed oil
along with chromium picolinate,
because it stays off. Because when you have unsaturated fat, it attracts saturated fats to it,
and it starts to deionize all these cell arterial walls and removes all this plaque, you know. So we
Well, that concludes today. We hope you